Breakfast puppies?
We're all set to begin, so let's dive right in to Bikers, Dice, and Bars. Talking bicycles and motorbikes, gamer things and all the like. You can listen to it in your cars, but mostly it's about dive bars. Bikers, Dice, and Bars.
Hey, Jacob, what are you drinking tonight?
In honor of the long Labor Day weekend, I'm having an all-American original, Pabst Blue Ribbon beer.
Portland's best reserve.
Yep. An all-American beer for an all-American country with dedication to the blue-collar worker. Hey, Lentzel, what are you drinking?
Well, I'm not feeling nearly so proletariat, so I'm actually drinking some Lindeman's Frambois, a beautiful raspberry tart, puckering, but still sweet beverage. Hey, Poppy, what are you drinking?
I'm drinking like a good local liberal, and I am drinking vintage 2014 Seven of Hearts to Not, bottled in Dundee, Oregon, from right here in the Columbia River Valley.
Dundee.
Hey, NPC, what are you drinking?
I'm drinking all of that. This is going to be a good night.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I'm going to have a headache. It's going to be awesome.
Mixing beverages.
Yeah. So how y'all been? Oh, yeah. By the way, this is Bikers, Dice, and Bars. Recorded here in Portland, Oregon. I am NPC.
I'm just Jacob.
And joining us again,
I'm Lentzel, like tinsel, but with an L.
And Poppy Beaujolais, your favorite local wannabe wine snob.
Sweet. Welcome back, y'all.
Thanks.
Good to have you. You guys might just be coming regulars.
Glad to be here.
I live here.
So yeah, it's been a good couple weeks. What'd y'all think of that Pugmire stuff?
Oh,
I'm looking forward to
so
that Shepherd.
Fun. I got a shout out from the creator on Twitter.
What?
Yeah.
Right on.
The creators are making a new game with cats.
Oh,
what? Yeah. Cat I'm very excited about that.
Yeah, the Monarchies of Mao.
Ooh.
Wow.
If it's not out, it's coming out soon. They had a Kickstarter for this last year or earlier this year. Maybe it was last year. I remember that one of their high reward levels was to have, they had multiple tiers of this, which was to have your cat immortalized in the game.
Oh,
I remember you talking about that.
So you could send the cat a picture of your cat and then make it either an NPC, a background character. They could make it a player character. It could make it a villain.
And did you submit a picture of Daisy?
Well, it was like $1,000 to have it. No, we had a conversation about this. And that was, sweetie, I want to immortalize your late cat because she was awesome. However, I can think of a million better things to do with $1,000.
It's a lot.
Than a vanity of a dead cat in a book.
Yeah, certainly the cat's not going to get anything out of it.
Yeah, the cat's getting nothing out of it. Yeah.
We can maybe crush her ashes into a diamond or something.
We could shower Pumpkin with infinite cat treats.
That's true. Pumpkin being my other cat.
Yeah. But it was really cool, and I wish I could have gotten in on it because Daisy was a sweetheart, and it would have been nice to immortalize her.
Yeah, cool, but we were a bit on a budget back then. Yeah,
she's immortal in your heart.
It's true.
Exactly.
Yeah, and we still find her cat hair pretty much everywhere, so, she lives on.
They stay with you forever.
They really do.
I'm glad we had a lot of fun with that one. That was a game that I'd been mulling over in my head for a while, and the fact that we had Oliver here to keep us company as our little spirit dog and his little abilities to bark on command. I almost just want to yell, hey, guys, and expect to hear
you
bark.
You can't hear you from here.
No. Yeah, that was a really good episode. It turned out really, really well. And it was, I would love to run that game and play Princess Pekingese in all her glory.
And all her stupidity.
I want to apologize to the listeners for yawning so much during that episode. If you hear anybody yawning, that's me. I apologize. It's been a rough couple of weeks at work.
Nobody heard nothing.
Oh, good. Okay. Well, then we'll cut that in post.
Anyway, y'all ready to take it to the road?
Let's do it.
Tonight we're talking about Don't Be That Guy.
Don't be that guy.
Don't be that guy.
Don't be that guy. Don't be that guy.
Who is that guy?
That guy is a lot of guys. It's a lot of gals. It's a lot of non-gender defined folks out there.
Do we know that guy?
We all know that guy, and many of us at one point in time, even for a moment, have been that guy.
No, I've never been that guy, Jacob.
I don't know what guy you're talking about,
but I've never been them.
Don't be that guy who, when sitting at a stoplight for no particular reason, just because you have a loud exhaust, sits there and revs it in the middle of a residential area at 7 in the morning. Right,
yeah. Oh, God.
Asshole.
You know, while we're at it, I'd say don't be that guy, the guy who gets on their parked bike and then revs it incessantly while they sit at a standstill while everybody around them is having to deal with that as well.
It's true.
I'm going to give a quiet defense of that, which is... Every time I start my bike, I give it a quick rev, but sure, I don't lay on it, but I start it and I rev it because I want to hear if it's going to explode.
I feel like there's a line between the audio part of that and the smell of it. For me, once you've revved a bike enough to blast everybody out with that with those fumes, that's the real issue.
Before we dive too hard in this, I'm going to just line up a couple corollaries here. One, there are sometimes reasons these things happen. If you're riding a 1973 Panhead and you come to a stop, maybe you're revving just to keep the bike running.
Yeah.
If you're the person who hops on their bike and sits there and revs their bike while sitting on it, maybe it is a CB 440 and you are just trying to get the engine to keep turning over. But... just don't be that guy.
Yeah.
If at all possible, don't be that guy that shoots through intersections, whether it's on a bicycle or a motorcycle.
No.
At least slow down if you're on a bicycle. I know Portland's got weird, stupid laws about it. Don't be that guy who is riding along on a bicycle on your daily commute without a helmet. Don't be that guy who sits there and when... you suddenly are riding along the street and then shoot onto the curb so you can ride across the pedestrian lane.
Mm-hmm.
Don't be yelling at pedestrians for being in your way.
Now, hold on. About that, the helmet. I gotta have a fashionable hairdo, man.
You're totally that guy.
I gotta have my fashionable hair when I get there.
Look.
Because if I put on that helmet and it's like a half hour ride across the city, it's gonna mess my coif up.
How quickly does your hair grow?
NPC, I know you're really attached to your white boy fade, but just give it up and use the bathroom when you get there.
Okay.
Fine.
God.
I want to tell a quick story about that gal.
You know
who you are. So there's this part when you're driving west on Hawthorne where it forces you to turn right, and then it becomes like the one way on Morrison or whatnot, right?
You're talking Belmont.
Belmont. Yeah, okay, it's on Belmont. And it's like 12th or 14th or whatever right there where you're forced to turn right. I saw a gal continue to ride her bicycle straight.
Oh, yeah.
Even though all the rest of us cars were turning.
Happens.
And I don't know how many times I saw her almost get creamed, but...
Don't be that guy or gal who rides the wrong way on a one-way bike lane.
Don't do that.
Don't do it.
Don't do that.
What situation arises that even allows somebody to become that guy?
It's called downtown lifestyle.
Don't be that guy who rides the wrong way on a street, period.
Yeah, agreed.
You ride with traffic, not against it. You're not living in the middle of nowhere on a rural road.
Pedestrians have the right of way. Bicycles, motorcycles, and cars do not. Those goddamn Lime scooters do not have the right of way either. You are not a pedestrian if you are on one of those scooters.
So we're not going to lean too hard into the scooter thing.
No, we're not going there.
Are you saying that everybody who rides a scooter is one of those guys?
No, I'm not.
No. But for our local Portland listeners, just know... that we've discussed it. There's not going to be any immediate hot takes on the Birdie and Glide scooters that have popped all over.
We're biding our time.
Just remember, you're not supposed to be riding them on the sidewalks. They're for bike lane and road use early. Enough said for the moment.
Correct. I think our official term for them, well, my official term for them will be Scooty McDumbasses.
We're trying, the NPC and I had a conversation about this the other day. We're trying not to be get off my lawn type grumpy old people when it comes to these scooters. But if you're breaking the laws, you're that guy.
But again, let's not go too deep into that because we could fill an entire episode either talking for or against or the both about those scooters. Anyway, tell us more about that guy.
Don't be that guy who, when going out on a long bike, long motor ride with a bunch of friends where you're going to like Seattle and then over to Eastern Washington and then maybe taking the snake into the Idaho. I'm certainly not thinking of anyone in particular here who doesn't pack a bailout bottle of gas, despite the fact you know there's a chance a couple of the gas stations we're going to hit are going to be closed.
So in that sense, not being prepared might lead you to become that guy.
There's the corollary to it. Don't be that guy who goes out on a touring trip on bicycles without a full set of camping gear, thinking you're going to mooch off of everybody else.
The mooch, that guy.
Oh, I hate that guy.
It's one thing if you forget something, but when you literally have packed no cooking gear.
I got a question for you, Jacob. Is there a name for that guy who can't help but ride up onto the sidewalk and then back onto the street every time that there's a driveway ramp? You know that guy who's like onto the sidewalk, off of the sidewalk, onto the sidewalk, off of the sidewalk, can't help himself? Who is that guy?
He's an asshole. That's who he is.
He's an asshole.
You know, all I'm going to say is I don't know what her name is, but she has hit two pedestrians in my neighborhood while doing that.
What an asshole.
Let me guess, it was on a mini bike, too.
Oh, no. No. It was a very, very nice fixie.
What an asshole.
What an asshole.
Don't be that guy who, when parking your bike downtown, locks it to someone else's bike who you do not know.
What is that guy even thinking?
Why would you ever do that?
Maybe they're one of those drunk assholes we're going to talk about in a minute.
Yeah. Double don't be that guy.
Yeah. Don't be that guy.
Don't be that guy. And this doesn't matter whether it's a scooter, whether it's a bicycle, whether it's a motorcycle. Don't be that guy who disrespects somebody else's ride just because the style isn't what you like. Didn't cost as much as you think it should or shouldn't have. Just don't be that guy. No. Don't say anything.
So what do y'all think? I want to get this a little more social sort of. I don't know what I'm trying to say here. What do y'all think? What is the reason why people do these things? Are they just inherently assholes? Are we going to go full on a fundamental attribution error? Or is there some deeper problem here? What do you think?
Well, hopefully they aren't just forever that way, because otherwise there's really no point to this episode, because what we're talking about is how not to be that guy.
Correct.
And if those guys are inherently like that all the time, there's really no helping them. So I think we have to assume that there are ways to curtail this behavior and ways to improve it.
And we've listed off just a smidgen of things that that guy does. How do we not be that guy, Jacob?
How do you not be that guy? Well, I think this is one where Poppy and I have a shared interest in delving the depths thereof.
No.
You know, the bottom line is, like I started out with, every one of us at one time or another is for at least a moment that guy.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I've certainly rolled my fair share of stop signs in my time.
Right.
I drive a car. I fuck up sometimes.
The thing is that it's an issue of your priorities of the moment. If your priorities of the moment are like getting from point A to point B as fast as possible, you've put that over courtesy to other road users. If your priorities are getting into work fast enough, locking to someone else's bike, who you know you're sure you're going to be out the door sooner than they are.
Trust me.
Trust me.
You're not.
Murphy's Law.
Been there.
If you're parking in front of partially obscuring somebody's driveway because, you know, it's the middle of the day and everybody in Portland is a creative who works from like 9 to 5 or is working from home. So it won't matter anyways. You know, it's you're just trying to get on with your life. The issue is doing everything you can to train yourself to think about everybody else's life around you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and especially speaking as a motorcyclist. And someone who it can be quite vehement about watch out for motorcycles. And, you know, we have a fair share to the road and everything. That should not lead one in thinking that you're entitled to anything.
Entitlement. It's huge.
When you sit on an engine that is connected to two wheels that goes faster than humans were ever meant to go, with no protection and just the wind screaming past you, it's a very powerful feeling.
Mm-hmm.
But even still, when you get on a bicycle and you start to pedal and you feel your muscles working, you feel your juices pumping, you've got that spirit, that activity, that power between your legs, and you're just pumping at it. You feel alive. It's a very similar feeling.
Mm-hmm.
You feel like I can do whatever I want.
Right.
You gotta try and hold that back and realize that even though you may have headphones blasting Eye of a Tiger when you're on the wheels.
I have no idea what you're talking about, sir.
No one else can hear your music, and they're not moving to the same beat, and they are not going to get out of your way, and they're not there to accommodate you, nor are they going to.
Also, if you're the person riding through my neighborhood like you were last night at midnight 15, cranking out 80s metal, in a speaker attached to your bicycle.
Don't be that guy.
Yeah, don't be that guy.
Oh, I've totally been that guy.
And we're not even necessarily talking about the, you know, like general rules of polite society, like some of which are crap and some of which are like pretty okay and we all just sort of do or whatever. We're talking about, I think, a very similar thing we were talking about the first episode I was on, which was when we were talking about helmet laws, which is what effect do your behaviors have on the people around you?
Yeah.
And if you are, you know, a bicyclist or a motorcyclist who is running stop signs and, you know, dodging in and out of things, like, you are putting other people at risk. And yourself at risk. And I mean, again, if you don't care about your own skin, like, I don't want to hit you.
Yeah,
that would ruin my day.
You know, if I hit you when you pull out in front of me, and if I hit you, you're probably going to hit the ground because you're probably not wearing any protection whatsoever. You care too much about that stupid haircut of yours. You're probably going to bonk your head, skin. And you're going to just be bleeding and rashed everywhere. And life is going to suck for you. And you know what? It's going to suck for me, too, because I just did that to someone. And I will always be second guessing myself from that day forward. And I will have flashbacks to your suffering.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely.
Don't put that on me.
Yeah, don't put that on me, man.
I don't want to put it on you.
Last night was the 6-year anniversary of the drunk driver hitting me when I was at a dead stop. Doesn't matter what sort of transportation you're taking. If you're doing something other than walking and you've had one too many, don't be that guy.
Don't be that guy.
Call a cab.
Lyft, Uber, one of those stupid scooters. You've got options now.
Don't operate a scooter if you're drunk. You will get a driving while impaired.
One of the 5 deaths in Portland has been because of inebriation.
That's true, but I don't think a drunk on a scooter is going to cause nearly as much damage to a parked motorcyclist as a drunk with a car.
Yeah,
but they will traumatize whoever hits them.
This is true.
Well, that's very interesting. I was rear-ended almost exactly 2 years ago. I just happened to be in a car and was hit by another car, and that person was not drunk. They just were not looking at the road.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it
sucks.
That's
the other thing is driving distracted.
Yeah, driving. That's another way to be that guy is driving distracted. And I know I do that occasionally and I need to stop. It's something I'm working on.
Well, especially on a bicycle. I feel like people who are riding a bicycle and somehow still managing to navigate a smartphone.
That blows my mind.
His talent is impressive. But at the same time,
here's that guy. You're riding a bicycle. It's a really expensive one. You're leaned back. You're pedaling. you're not holding the handlebars, and you're texting.
Yeah.
Yes.
Fuck that guy.
Yes.
Don't be that guy.
Don't be that guy.
You know, you think you'll look cool, but you actually look like a douchebag.
And motherfuckers, stay the hell off of Clinton if you're doing that.
Yeah.
My mornings are hard enough.
Stay off of Sandy. Oh, my God.
There's an episode of Portlandia about you. Mm. Do you realize this? I hope you do. Just don't be that guy.
And that really is a great one for all of our local listeners out there. If there has ever been an episode of Portlandia about what you do,
reconsider.
Don't be that guy.
Yeah, reconsider your life choices and maybe find a good cognitive behavioral therapist to help you out.
We know several.
So speaking of that guy and how not to be that guy, we're going to carry this topic on into the gaming section. Now, like cycling, like biking, even more so than those, gaming is an intensely social activity. Unless you're just playing single player games or video games, or you're at home with those choose your own adventure, and that is the limit of what you do, then you don't have to worry about being that guy.
That's a different kind of guy.
That's a different kind of guy.
Yeah. I very much like my solo military simulation board games. Thank you very much.
Well, then you just go do that and have fun with it. Mm-hmm. And you can play this as rudely as you wish.
I will.
But when you get a group of people together, you're all buying into the concept, the basic level of understanding that we're all going to be sharing the same space for the next 3 to 6 or so hours, depending upon what our proclivities are. How am I going to enjoy this time with my fellow people? Well, clearly it's going to be by insulting them in the game that we're playing, telling everybody they're doing it wrong, and then basically pissing everybody off so I don't get invited next time. You don't want to be that guy.
Don't definitely not be that guy.
Hmm.
I'm assuming that we've experienced that person.
Oh, yeah. Many varieties.
I have not, but I haven't gamed nearly as much.
Your gaming experiences have been very carefully sheltered.
Yeah, that's true. There was that one where somebody was trying to one of the players was trying to out GM you. Was like trying to GM from the sidelines.
That's always tricky beast.
And that was...
I've definitely been that guy.
Yeah, that was one of my very first attempts at a campaign. And that was... It was pretty obvious that it was uncomfortable and weird, but...
Yeah, don't be that guy.
No.
Okay, so everybody's going to sit down at the table and you're all going to essentially have a role in this group. But that role is twofold. You have a role as a human. You are a participant. You have a social role, and then you have a mechanical role. And sure. that has nothing to do with any character that you may be playing or any team that you may be backing or any position that you may be fronting in whatever game that you're playing. Before we even talk about if you're the fighter or the cleric or the juicer or the shepherd or
don't
whatever.
Don't be the juicer.
Juicer?
Yeah, don't juice.
Is that the person who brings their juice tiger with them?
Sure.
And makes just everybody
assume
that healthy.
Just assume that's what it is.
Makes them healthy smoothies for their adventures.
Yeah, so
that's
healthy.
Really nice.
One day I'll introduce you to Rifts, but
oh God,
you'll be forever changed.
Yeah.
Oh, great.
In a chemical way.
Which is what the juicers do. They anyway.
My interest is piqued.
No. Dear God, no.
Don't be that guy.
Don't be that guy.
Really, Poppy, you're more of a crazy.
Yeah.
Well, yes.
Plenty of joke. Anyway, regardless of the character that you're playing, you have a role in the group as a player, as a participant in this social thing, and that has its own rules, this own social contract.
Let's start off with, don't be that guy who is playing a different level of intensity than the rest of the people at the table.
Oh, interesting.
This doesn't matter whether this is... This doesn't matter whether it's a video game. It doesn't matter whether it's a board game. It doesn't matter whether you're playing pool. It doesn't matter whether you're playing a role-playing game. Moderate what you're doing. If everybody else is playing in a very laid-back, silly style, being John Grimdark that nobody understands you but you, your trench coat, and your katana.
I would have dated him in high school.
You know, that reminds me of a great quote from an early game that Xander was present in and our former guest Christina was present in. And that quote was, your character only has mystery if anyone gives a shit.
Exactly.
Ooh. I like that.
Yeah. If you come to the table playing a lone wolf character with a mysterious past and you wrote this intense backstory and you want to be mysterious, but you don't actually want to tell anybody about it.
Fuck that guy.
Nobody don't be that cares.
We need information you. So we can fucking play the game.
If you're playing Werewolf of the Apocalypse and you're trying to play a hardcore manipulative political shadow lord, and everybody else is playing a goddamn bone gnar, maybe this is not the party for you.
Yeah.
Dial it back, my friend.
Lenzel, you said it right. Read the group.
Yeah, you got to travel the speed of traffic. Ultimately, if you are a standout, if you're going too fast or too slow, you're bogging down everybody else's fun time.
Ooh. And dear bikers, that's another one for you. Travel the speed of traffic, be it at the gaming table or on the road or at the bar.
Plus 5 miles per hour, municipality permitting.
Yeah, you got to feel the room. You got to know that who you're playing with, and you got to be able to identify not just what you want from the game, but what everybody else wants from the game. And you got to be able to compromise and come to a consensus about what we're all going to get.
You know, the guy that I have a really hard time with is the guy who says, "That's what my character would do," when it's at the detriment of the fun of the table and of everybody involved, because their character that they've created has been poorly thought out enough that they haven't really considered the fact that they're not going to work well with a group.
That's what my character would do.
That's what my character
would do. I also chose to make an asshole as a character.
My character likes to kill everybody.
That's not my problem. Yeah. That's my character.
Yeah.
I think we've all been, I mean, with my limited gaming experience, I think we've probably all been at that table with this person. And like, maybe you get the little sense, like maybe your spidey senses are like, maybe this person is having challenges reading the room. Like maybe they don't have a neurotypical brain and they have a hard time reading the room. Like, how do you have a conversation about that without really embarrassing this person? Or how do you address the entire group and say, like, let's talk about the tone of this game? Or like, how do you all handle that when, I mean, because I've definitely seen this before where, like, yeah, exactly.
I'm going to talk in the most extreme of cases. Okay. I had a player in a game that was bothersome to me, but this player was so unhinged that I almost thought that if I had a conversation with them, they might stab me.
Wow. Yikes.
And so that's an extreme case.
Yeah, don't be that guy who stabs your GM.
Don't be that guy.
Let's be real here, folks. GMs are a precious, limited resource this world.
We are.
Do not kill us.
So that's an extreme case, and I'm not going to go through details on how I dealt with that because...
The restraining order is still pending?
No, but I came up with a 5-stage plan and a couple of fallback plans, and plan C involved police.
Oh, wow.
But thankfully, I didn't have to do that. It all basically boils down to talk to your players.
Yeah.
Now, if they're not the person that's going to handle being put on the spot in front of a lot of people, talk to them in the sideline. I mean, how'd you meet them in the first place? Mm-hmm. You obviously have some kind of connection with them. Now, however, what if my problem is with Jacob, but I don't know Jacob. Lenzel brought Jacob to the table. So Lenzel comes and says, "I got this guy. It's great. I'm going to bring him." I'm like, wait. Oh, he's already here. God damn it. So then we sit and we play, and Jacob, giving me that shitty face he's giving me right now, spends the whole time being like the worst player ever. And I don't want
Jacob to come back. That's not how paladins work. That's not how they work.
I don't want Jacob to come back. I can't talk to Jacob, though. That's not my responsibility at that point. If you bring someone, you have to be able to vouch for them and...
Be responsible for
Don't be that guy who brings somebody to a game night who really shouldn't be there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And again, read the room. And if the room is just you and one other person, read them before you decide to bring them into another group. You gotta, a little bit of self-awareness helps. I've been that guy. I'll be point blank honest with you and all our listeners. I am the worst player.
Really?
I'm awful because I do all the things that most GMs hate because I am a career GM. I have extreme attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. My mind is going a million miles an hour and I need to be able to latch onto something and cling to it and stick with it. well with when I run a game, and my brain, I can just control the world. So now I have this thing blossoming in my brain, and it's beautiful. When I'm a player, I have an axe. And occasionally, I get to hit something with that axe. And when I'm not hitting something with that axe, I'm like, okay, I'm looking at my phone because I got to be distracted, or I'm petting the dog, or I'm not paying attention. And I'm that guy. So I choose to not be that guy by not playing.
Yeah. I get very easily distracted, as you probably have all noticed. So I try to make it as non-intrusive as possible. And I try to distract myself with things like my phone or withdrawing or something like that, and not with like bugging other players. Cause that's where my sort of ADHD brain wants to go, is like talking to other people, you know?
This is a good moment for giving advice to game masters to also not be that guy and how to mitigate it. Sometimes that guy isn't actually that guy. Sometimes you're that guy.
Yeah.
You can be the shitty ass GM. You can be the guy who's really only there who, because you couldn't hack it as a novelist, and you're simply trying to tell your story.
Ouch, hot take.
You could be that GM who really just gets a kick out of making people suffer.
Mm. Yeah, I don't like
they
that.
They should
guy.
Just go to Kinkfest.
No, wait. Whoa. There's a reason RPGs I use. Run Delta Green, damn it.
But also, we're not going to. I don't want to focus too much on GMs right now, man. No. GMs are a whole other class right. than sure. that guy. So we're going to talk about players. And I want to give some advice to GMs, because that guy isn't always that guy. Sometimes you can mitigate it by simply listening and offering them something else. Like me as a player, for me to be a good player in a game, I need a GM who's willing to work with me and give me things to do. Throw your NPCs at me and let me roll the dice for your bad guys, so that now I'm engaged. Oh, and guess what? You don't have to roll the dice anymore.
Yeah.
Cool. That means you can work on something else while I'm killing the rest of the party with your NPCs.
Yeah. No, that right there is one of my favorite things. A couple of years back, ran a game of Cthulhu Tech, which you can judge me as much as you want for. And you're right.
No judgments.
And I never once during that entire campaign picked up a die. Every single time I needed to make a roll, I randomly pointed at a player, particularly ones that looked bored, and made them roll. And it was the worst thing. Great. And, you know, the other thing is that talk about undercutting the whole us, us, them versus them mentality.
Yeah. Sure.
No one ever hated the GM. They hated the last person who rolled the dice.
Oh, hey.
When Poppy plays, I try and always give Poppy something to do. In fact, I run in a way that makes Poppy always engaged in the moment. That way you're not growing tired or getting bored. You're constantly there with the rest of the
group. I appreciate that. Yeah.
And I know, because I have ADHD, I need to be engaged. Yeah. And I see that you're someone who also is like, I'm going to be, ooh, squirrel. So yeah. I'm like, okay, well, the squirrel's at the table, actually. Ooh. Watch it move, and now stab it. Kind of thing.
Yeah, I feel like for me, when I feel that urge, when I get that ADD kick or whatever, and I feel distracted, my tendency is to get up and get myself a glass of water, which I can do within earshot of the table, because my biggest problem when I get distracted is I make smart-ass comments. Mm. And being that guy, you know, trying to get a laugh, which is something I always love,
it can ruin the moment.
It can absolutely ruin the moment. Yeah. In addition to that, it's a huge distraction. It means that other players are listening to me and not listening to the GM talk, or they're not paying attention to what they should be doing on their turn and so forth.
That's a great one. But another don't be that guy is don't be that guy who doesn't come prepared.
Yeah.
And this is one that...
Bring your own dice.
I knew he was going to say that, folks.
Jacob.
Jacob, you can leave some dice here.
No, it's never here.
Okay.
I'm not going to run down the myriad defenses I could potentially make to that, because in all actuality, I feel horrible about it whenever I sit down at the gaming table and I'm like, there's a reason I built myself a tiny pocket vest sized box of dice so I could just throw them in whatever I'm carrying that day
and
do it.
Hey, bring your own dice, but also don't be that guy who just reaches over and grabs someone else's dice.
Oh, yeah.
Without asking. Yeah.
Hmm. Which I've never done, in my defense.
No, you don't. I've played with people who are like, I'm just going to, and you're like,
wow, I didn't realize that there was such strong dice possessiveness here at this table.
Many people...
Don't touch my dice.
See, I don't care.
Yeah, I have so many dice. I'm like, here, just, you know.
I don't care.
Just make sure they get back to me.
Okay, I don't care. And some you people might do. Not care, but other people do.
Yeah, for
and
sure.
You need to know this before you grab their dice.
Yeah, you could be rubbing your bad luck all over those dice. And we all know how gamers feel about that.
Who knows what disgusting things they've done to those dice?
It's true. Give them luck. It's very true. Well, I think that comes back to it in general about, like, you know, don't be an asshole, don't be that guy or whatever, is that just because something doesn't bother you doesn't mean it's not going to bother somebody else.
Fair enough.
Everybody has different tolerances and filters and boundaries and et cetera. And if, you know, hopefully if you're doing something that does bother someone, they're going to tell you, like, hey, don't do that. Mm. But this is where we all have to sort of just agree to try to not be assholes to each other and, again, read the room.
Focusing a little ways away from the RPG to the board gaming, card gaming, video gaming space. You know who I'm looking at. I'm looking at you. You know who you are. You're the person who volunteers to teach someone how to play a game.
And then schools them.
And then beats on them mercilessly. It doesn't matter whether it's Settlers of Catan. It doesn't matter whether it's Magic the Gathering. It doesn't matter whether it's something the latest version of the Battlefield games that they don't have. If you're offering to teach someone something and share the experience, and all you're really looking for is a whipping boy.
Yeah, an easy win.
No.
That's fucked up.
I was the reverse version of that guy once, in that I sat down with a bunch of people at a party. It was a gaming party, a board game party, and I offered to teach people a game. And it was kind of a round robin version. It was Bang, essentially. It was Samurai Bang. No, it was just Bang. It was regular Bang.
Bang, yeah.
And I offered to teach this group of people this game. And then, so I started just to show how the turn went, moved on to the left. And one of the people that I was teaching, who already I was like, I don't actually like this person. We have moral differences.
Good thing you were sitting so close to each other and Bang then.
But, you know, it was a social thing. I'm like, I'm not going to let moral those things bother. We're all playing a game. Maybe we can get over that. And then she's just like, oh, is this how I do it? And killed me. Took me out of the game in the first round. First turn of the game, took me out.
In Bang?
Like, in Bang.
Mm. Wow, that's some lucky draws.
She had a really good hand. So if I do this, I can just kill you, right? I'm like, yeah, you could, but you probably wouldn't. I'm going to do it. Well, we're not friends anymore.
That's rough in an elimination game, especially.
Okay, so now I'm not going to teach you how to play anymore because she knows how to. Anyway, I was really spoiled by it. I was pissed off.
Yeah, that's no good.
She hates me.
NPC, are you saying you know how to hold a grudge?
I do.
You know, I can think of another guy with regard to board gaming, and it's something I get regularly at my gaming groups, which are people who have a brand new game that they have not opened, have not read the manual for, and are not prepared to teach to anybody else. At the very least, you have to have some prior knowledge about any game that you're bringing to the table so that you have some ability to tell people what it's going to be like, even if you've never played it yourself.
Or, at the very least, let's say you got a brand new board game or whatever. Let people know they're buying into a learn-as-you-go experience. Sure. You know, just let people know the ticket they're buying.
Yeah.
And you don't be that guy.
If you go online, there are now gameplay videos for the vast majority of
everything. Oh,
nice. So for 2 minutes, 3 minutes, 5 minutes, you can sit down, you can have a general sense of what the game's going to be like. So at the very least, you're prepared to start off with something.
And pro tip, that's also a great place to go, I'm kind of interested about this game. I don't know whether I want to buy it or not. Mm. Watch the video first, because the moment you hear a group of people you respect on their opinions of other games go, yeah, this one's kind of hard. Maybe you should bail. Mm.
So this segment's getting a bit long, but I've got a really good way to segue into the next one. That is drinking and smoking weed at the table. You know what? is fine. Some people function that way. Some groups, that's what they do. And if they, if you do, that's good on you. I like to drink when I game. It loosens me up. It frees my tongue up. I feel that social lubricant flowing in. There have been a few games where I've gotten too drunk, but for the most part, I like to balance it. I think if you're going to be that guy who brings beer or weed to a group, make sure it's cool first.
Yeah.
And make sure that everyone else is aware, like Poppy here, you're not necessarily fond of people smoking weed around you. So you need to make sure that everyone else is okay with the smell of it, with the scent of it, with the feeling of it.
And going on from that, it's not just an issue of whether or not you're imbibing. It's don't imbibe out of step. And this is one where, like, I have been at numerous times in my life, including a point within the last month where I accidentally outstepped the rest of the people at the table with how much I had been drinking. And it led me to having volume 11 Jacob going on.
Oh, dear.
And, well, okay. In all actuality, being in Minnesota, and it was like volume 7, Jacob.
But, but yeah, don't. That was definitely, do not outdrink the people. Like, you want to maintain pace, or at least if you're going to drink at a group, make sure that you are not the only one drinking.
Right.
And, you know, make sure that people are kind of tuned into what is happening here. Some people want to sit down and have a serious emotional story, and they don't want your shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So don't do it.
At the very least, if you're in a role-playing game, do not drink your GM.
So we're talking about those guys here today. And as a former bartender, I feel like I have some particular experience regarding those guys who have a problem with their alcohol.
Ugh.
And those guys who do not know how to act when they are drinking at a bar. I think we've all encountered bars where those guys exist. The guys who just can't help themselves but be the absolute loudest person in the bar. No matter what happens, they have to outvolume everybody else because they have to be the center of attention.
Oh.
Those guys frustrate me.
Now, you have volume.
Oh, yeah.
So I can see that being like quite a shouting match at some point.
As a bartender, I was very happy with the fact that I could always outvolume anybody in the bar. There was nobody who could be louder than me in the bar, but there were people who could easily become too loud without even realizing it. And my technique with those people is always to walk up behind them and say incredibly loudly, like so loud that the entire bar stops talking, "You guys don't have to be so loud!"
I happened to be in the tugboat one night when that happened.
Yeah, it was definitely a semi-common occurrence. Also, don't be those guys who bring their own alcohol into the bar.
What the fuck?
Why are those guys doing that?
Yeah.
I remember instances.
Is there anywhere in the world where you can do that, like, just regularly?
I think maybe in New Orleans, because I feel like you can do pretty much anything with alcohol in New Orleans.
Okay. In defense of that one, at that point, if I was tending a bar in Portland, and someone came in with their own alcohol, I'd be like, "How long you been in town?" Because there are large stretches of this country where the only way you can drink spirits is to bring your own bottle, turn it over to the bartender, and they drink it. Pour it for you.
And there's certainly a mechanism for that in many bars. Right. But what I'm talking about is the guy who brings in the Colt small 45. Bottle of plastic Wild Crew, you know, and they're stepping back. And I literally, cleaning the bathroom one night, remember finding an empty bottle of whiskey tucked into the toilet's tank, like as if, you know, sneakily hidden back there. I couldn't figure out why it wouldn't flush, and it wasn't until I pulled it out. There you go.
Speaking of bathrooms, don't be that guy who carries a fucking Sharpie in his pocket.
Oh.
Who are you? I've never met you.
Yeah.
But you're a dick.
Yeah.
Don't do that. Nobody cares about what you have to say. No, if people look at it when they, like, do you know we laugh at you? Like, do we know? Do you know this? Don't be that guy.
Nathaniel, you're stepping all over my artistic expression.
I have seen some really funny stuff written on the walls of women's bathrooms.
Yeah,
I have to say.
I feel like there should be a place for that guy, but it's not in every bar, that's for sure.
No.
Some bars will have chalkboards
in the bathroom.
Yeah, I like
the chalkboards. And they encourage it.
Yeah.
Matt Hanna right down the street.
Matt Hanna.
And then they take pictures of it, clean it, and then they just do it like monthly or something.
The PDX Burger used to be the Rock and Roll Chili Pit down in downtown.
Oh, I know that place very well.
Yeah, so do I. Best boozy shakes in Portland. Come at me, bro.
Better than the original?
Still.
Okay.
I mean, they didn't change the formula at all.
All right. No, I mean, the original Dinerot.
No, better than the original.
Okay. All right.
Better than the original Dinerot. But when they opened up, they had their bathroom decorated by having all of the first customers get handed paint.
That's kind
of
fun.
And go in there and do their thing. And they've repainted it like a couple times.
Oh, that's fun.
If it's part of the aesthetic and it's part of
the culture, being that guy.
That's fine. You're not being that guy.
No, that guy is the guy who uses a Sharpie to mark up the trash can in the bathroom inexplicably because they've got to put their tag on it so that they can identify that trash as theirs.
And let's just be real. There's not a lot of bathrooms and bars. You're taking up time.
That's true. Well, what really pisses me off is when an establishment has obviously paid good money and spent time and thought into painting some kind of like beautiful mural inside of a bathroom and then some asshole like with their Sharpie like fucking tags it. That just pisses me right off.
Dear taggers, don't be that guy.
Yeah, really. I mean, ultimately, that's not about the alcohol so much. That's just about somebody who has the intention to draw on something in wherever the heck they go.
That's fair.
No good. You know, the other guy that I have a hard time with is the guy who comes in and cannot be satisfied by any beverage that you offer them.
Oh, fuck that guy.
The hypercritical guy, the guy who's like, oh, let me taste this beer. That's not what I'm looking for. I'm looking for something dark. Then you pour them dark beers. I'm not looking for that. Do you have an IPA? What do you want, dude? just figure it out.
And then you're like, okay, well, you've sampled everything in this. You know. You got a Budweiser?
Yeah, I'm not feeling it. I'm going to go.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one thing where Portland's rather liberal culture with tasting. I hate being behind a guy in line at one of my local beer halls, whether it's Sessionable, whether it's Imperial, whatever. And they're basically trying to score their way into a free pint worth of beer by tasting everything on the goddamn menu.
Yeah. Look, it's totally acceptable, especially in Portland's crazy passionate beer microbrew scene, that you're not going to know all the lists of the beers, all the names of the beers that are on a list. And asking questions is not only valid, but highly encouraged to ask your bartender questions about the beers. But it's a whole other story to be like, this is like an ice cream shop and I'm just going to roll down the line.
I think we know what every menu in Portland beer bars have these days. They have 27 IPAs. They have two stouts, one cider, and three kombuchas.
And Widmer Hef.
and maybe some PBR tall boys.
Except for Sessionable. Thank God you exist, Sessionable.
Other guys that I have a hard time with, I mean, this is a delicate topic, but those who drink too much. They are a mixed blessing for the bartender because we appreciate the consistent business. We appreciate the regular customer who comes in, who's knocking down a handful of beers and is tipping you well. But when you've got somebody who's gone too far down the line, the real issue is trusting your bartender when your bartender cuts you off. And those guys who refuse to accept a bartender's cutoff, who claim that they're more sober than they appear, or who claim that they can handle it because they're somehow some kind of exception, those guys are among the worst because every bartender who deals with them knows they don't want to make them angry because they don't want them to stop being a customer, but you also don't want to get them so drunk that they hurt themselves and then stop being a customer in that way as well.
Or that they hurt others.
Yeah.
Well, right.
At what point do you weigh their patronage against the additional loss of other customers?
Well, I can say that in my experience, that the easiest way to deal with that is always to address it with a really matter-of-fact, honest approach. And that is to say, look, I like you. I like you drinking here. I need to cut you off now. But unfortunately, I don't want that to affect our relationship. I want you to know that I'm doing this because I like you and I want you to survive and be healthy and be okay. And
you
I want to
come
see
back
you
and drink tomorrow.
Exactly.
Yeah, that really depends on the type of bar you're serving at. Like, when I've worked railroad bars where it's all of the guys are coming in at the same time every day and everything, you want to preserve that relationship. If it's a neighborhood bar or a regulars bar, that's the case. If it's like one of the many college bars I served, go out, get out. You're disposable.
Yeah, you got to draw that line. Yeah. I mean, much shorter.
And I think, you know, and I, as a patron, like, you know, we do remember these things, and we will, at least for me, like, I will, you know, I will continue to patronize somebody who obviously has my safety and my interests in mind. One of my favorite stories from late college, my friend and I hung out at this wine bar every week because that's what we did when we were in college. Mm. And we were there on New Year's Eve. And I was probably 22 or 23, you know, and we were there New Year's Eve and we closed the place down. We had been there since 5 p.m. to get a table. And we were very good customers. We tipped very well. We spent a lot of money there and we closed the place down and it was really snowy outside and we were drunk as shit. And it was a small town, didn't have a great cab service. This was long before Uber or Lyft. And the bartender who, you know, was, I think it was Brian, I remember his name, was like, just hang out while I close down. I'll give you a ride home.
Yeah. I like to refer to that as full service bartender.
He was a full, you know, and we didn't live that far from the place. And he, you know, he gave us a ride home, made sure we were safe. I think he even gave us coffee and bread while we waited. Mm-hmm. And he refused to take any money from us. So we just like left a $20 bill in his car as we like stumbled out of it. Like, nice. Thank you, yep. Brian from Chow Vino's in Fort Collins, Colorado. We love you.
Oh, Brian.
So, in the past and even today, I still moonlight as a catering bartender for special events. And I don't care what member of the wedding party you are.
Mm.
Don't be that guy.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The same rules apply. I don't give a damn that you're watching your baby girl become a woman because she's being married and you need an extra glass of wine. If I cut you off, or if I can't make cocktails because of the license or whatever it is, don't be that guy. I'm doing my job.
Yeah.
What about that guy who's sitting at the bar talking to everyone, mm-hmm. but really bad at it?
Mm.
And you start to notice your customers are leaving the bar where they would normally be comfortable. How do you manage that?
I had a fantastic solution for that problem. I had a series of notes that I kept behind the bar. I had, I think, about five of them. They were just small index cards that I'd written in Sharpie on. And on one of them, it said, "Do you need out of this conversation?" Mm-hmm. Another one said, "Should I interrupt?" And then I had another one that said, "Shall I interrupt?" Because I wanted, you know, for a little more highfalutin-y. And so what I'd do is I'd actually hold this over the head of the person who was a problem so that people adjacent to them in the bar could see it, but that they could not. So I gave my patrons an opportunity to indicate to me with a little nod like, yes, I do need this person to stop talking to me. And then I would intercede. And usually I'd insult the person in a joke. I'd say, "Oh, is this guy talking your ear off?" Or I'd reference the conversation specifically. And then I'd reengage that problem person to try and deal with whatever problem they were.
So you would take on the burden of maintaining a social interaction with this person so that someone else could have an escape.
In many instances, I spent many nights at that bar talking to the person at the bar that I least wanted to talk to.
It's part of the paycheck.
It is, absolutely. It is an unfortunate aspect of bartending, but there are lots of times where you're dealing with somebody and you've already given them a drink. They're going to finish that drink. You don't really want to serve them anymore, but you still have to deal with them over the course of that time and deal with whatever problem they have. And if it becomes too much, then at that point, you ask them to move on. But hopefully you don't have to get to that point.
Hopefully not. So, Lenzel, do you have any good life pro tips for people who want to be better drunks?
Mm. Okay, well, here's a good one. In the course of my bartending career, I definitely encountered a number of people who, having imbibed too much alcohol, had to make a hasty trip to the rear bathroom in order to reproduce that alcohol in a less palatable fashion into our toilets. And, you know, that is the nature of alcohol. When you've gone too far, the body naturally rejects it. It's something that we're all probably have had to deal with ourselves at some point or other. I can't imagine not. And I think that one of the best things you can do in these kinds of situations is that you can cop to it. You can step to the bartender and you can say, look, I'm sorry, I have, or a friend can come up and say, my friend has. You can even make a effort to try and remedy the problem, although sometimes that ends up being worse than a synod.
Spew in this Dixie cup.
No, it's much more like, okay, one of my good friends, I kind of feel bad calling him out, he's a chef at Noble Rot.
Oh, wait a minute.
Should I leave that in?
He, sure. he came into my bar with some friends and drank a handful of strong beers. And then thinking that his friends wanted to continue drinking, picked up a pitcher of a sweeter stout. And his friends mostly rejected it because they were pretty much done. So he knocked the remainder down himself.
Oh, dear.
Oh.
After drinking some rather strong other beers, some Chernobyls. And then realizing that he had to deal with the issue, he fled back to the bathrooms, but he knew he wasn't going to make it. So he went into my kitchen because, of course, he is a chef. So he's like, oh, I could go in here and throw up there.
Oh, dear.
He got much of it into the sink. But to his credit, he then got a mop and started to clean it.
Aww.
And I had some random person come up to the bar and say, there's some guy who's in your kitchen, like, mopping up vomit. So I went back there, realized this guy, he was incredibly apologetic. He was very much, he knew that he was in the wrong, and I appreciated it. And I went back to the bar, grabbed a couple of olives, stuffed them up my nose so that I didn't have to smell vomit, and then proceed to finish cleaning it up with him. And that guy is a very good friend of mine even still. He is one of my favorite people on the planet. He's absolutely wonderful. And it was that experience of him stepping up and trying to fix the problem that he'd caused that actually I found so endearing.
Circling back to what we started on, sometimes there's the moments where we've all been that guy.
Yeah.
If you can try to find your way out of it, do so.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just got to claw yourself out back into reality.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's one. Anyone else? Any other good tips?
Good tips. I mean, I think the trusting your bartender is one of the best tips that I can give most drinkers, because I feel like it is in the bartender's interest for you to have a good time. So as long as you're having a good time and the bartender is having a good time with you, and at that point, the bartender tells you when things stop being so good for him and for everybody else, or for her.
They're there to make money.
They're there to make money, and they're there to make sure that everything goes smoothly across the bar. And once the bartender tells you, look, I think you've had enough, or I think you need to slow down, maybe you should just take a breather, have a pint of water. Those are all reasonable requests. Mm-hmm. Don't be the guy that takes personal offense at those requests. Be the guy who says, okay, this person is looking out for me, and accept that, and there you go.
All right, absolutely. Well, I'll drink to that.
Right on.
Let's get some clink on.
Yep.
Cheers.
This is the last call for alcohol this evening. Drink up, drink up, drink up, and order again. This is the last call for alcohol, get going. Drink up, drink up, drink up, then order again.
Don't be that guy, folks.
Don't be that guy.
Be that guy.
You're probably listening, that guy. Don't be yourself anymore.
Yeah,
we appreciate that.
Do you think that guy is still tuned in?
Honestly, you know, that guy is probably sitting there nodding along. And
maybe they're going to mention me again.
I hope. He's like, I hate those people. Yeah, they're awful. And you know what? I'm with you. I hate those people, too, because I've been that guy.
I've been that guy.
And I didn't realize it at the time.
I've been that guy.
But sometimes you look back shamefully like, oh, God, last night I was totally that guy.
Yeah. In my 20s, I got really tanked way too often in some bars. I was totally that guy.
I was
a cute
shame.
Like 95 pound petite white girl, like, you know.
Yeah, I have some shameful moments, and sometimes I'm laying in bed, I'm trying to go to sleep, and my eyes pop wide open. I'm like, I remember that one time. Why did I do that? I can't do anything about it right now, but oh God, shame.
Do you think those guys feel shame?
Yes.
Honestly,
many do, because more often than not, those guys are us. Now, admittedly, there are some people out there who are just they've leaned into being assholes.
Leaned into being assholes.
Some people try and make it a thing. Like, you know, I know men, women, and people of all orientations and genders that are like, yeah, well, I'm just an asshole. I'm just a bitch. It's my thing. You know what?
Those people are
not cool.
No, people are sad, miserable, and insecure people.
If your thing is I'm rude, you know what? You need to reconsider that.
Yeah. Because
nobody likes that.
Nobody likes
that. And the people that say that they do, they're not really your friends.
No,
sorry.
They talk shit about you behind your back, honey.
Yeah.
Or you're a member of a cult.
Yeah.
There's that too.
Oh, don't be that guy. Dark.
Don't be that guy.
Don't be the member. Don't be the guy
from
starts
just
a cult.
Jacob.
Well, let's go ahead and close this out, folks. Do you have any last thoughts on this topic? Anything we didn't cover that you want to give a last nod to?
I think that if you're sitting here wondering, am I that guy? Go to someone you trust. Go to someone that you know will tell you the truth and ask them, like, hey, am I that guy? Like, do I ever do or say anything that's like offensive and like nobody's telling me? And, you know, hopefully they'll do you a solid and be like, you know what? Yeah, occasionally you blah, blah, blah. And it's kind of bothersome. And then you have a choice to make, you know, or maybe you just have anxiety.
Yeah, I mean, the real solution for those kind of situations as well is to come up with a secret symbol.
Ooh.
So that way at a gaming table or wherever you're at, somebody gives you that symbol that says, hey, you're being that guy right now that we talked about.
Use the buddy system.
Use the buddy system.
If you are concerned about being that guy and you're out with a friend, be it at a game, be it on a ride, be it at a rally, or be it at a bar, use the buddy system, and each of you come up with a, hey, you're being that guy right now, symbol.
And here's a little bit from me. This is a little bit word from the Midwest out to all y'all here on the West Coast.
Don't you know?
Well, geez.
All that passive-aggressive you practice, all of that not saying a thing. Folks, if you see that guy, tell that guy that they're being that guy. Tell him frank. Tell him open. Tell him honest. Tell him respectful. But tell them they're being that guy, because when I'm that guy, I may not appreciate it at the moment, but in the long run, I do. Thank you.
And Frank, if you're listening, take a moment to look at yourself. Stop and think, how do I sound right now? What am I putting out right now? What are people seeing? Like, how do, look at yourself in the mirror, shake your head. Don't throw up when you do so. But seriously, take a moment and just have, maybe for the first time in your life, a moment of true self-awareness and enjoy it. And it might be, well, you might not be able to enjoy it. It might be a nightmare. And if it is, hey, you know, use that as a lesson that you need to get better.
And as the female-bodied and female-identified person at this table, dudes, bros, gentlemen, if you see other dudes, bros, and gentlemen behaving in a way that is disrespectful towards women, please say something, because we can't always stand up for ourselves because it's not safe. You got to get your bro.
If you see something, say something.
And Frank, as always, I'm NPC.
I'm just Jacob.
Joining us again,
I'm Linsel, like tinsel, but with an L.
And I'm Poppy Beaujolais.
And we want to remind you,
rubber side down.
May your dice always roll crits.
Always drink responsibly.
And always tip your bartender. Plus, don't be that guy.
Thanks for joining us, friend. We've reached the end of Bikers, Dice, and Bars. Talking bicycles and motorbikes, gamer things and all alike. You can listen to it in your car. The Bikers, Dice, and Bars.
Yep.